This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
IBM dumps Blue Waters.
And Steve Scott joins NVIDIA.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for August 12, 2011, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael. Michael, you've been rooting for a big news week going through the summer, and I think we finally got one.
Yeah, we did. It was kind of a surprise, but IBM and NCSA obliged, not necessarily they wanted to have this story, but there it is. IBM.
There it is. Yeah, all of a sudden a joint press release coming out of IBM and NCSA. We've been talking about looking forward to Blue Waters now for a long time, especially in discussing the role of U.S. in the international supercomputing field. We're all looking ahead to Blue Waters, but we're not looking forward to it immediately anymore.
Yeah, it's not to be, at least not in this incarnation. IBM basically pulled the plug on the contract. They're backing out. They decided at this point that it wasn't going to profit them enough. It was too expensive, and the complexity was such that they felt like they couldn't go forward, and they executed the termination clause of the contract.
Right. Now, this is coming pretty late in the ballgame. This contract was initially awarded when, Michael? You had that in your article.
2008, I think, was the final, but it actually started before that. It was in 2007 they started negotiating this. So it's been, you know, 3-4 years that this thing has been going forward. And, yeah, it is late.
IBM's already collected
$30 million.
IBM's already collected $30 million and delivered a couple of racks.
Three racks, right.
They're going to get the machines back. They're going to give the money back. We were expecting full deployment by the end of 2011. That's clearly not happening.
Actually, I think it was going to be into 2012 was the new schedule. But, yeah, sometime in 2012. And, yeah, they were going to continue to deploy this year and have a lot of it up. But, yeah, all of a sudden it seems like they decided it wasn't going to pay for itself, and they pulled out. And you know, I talked with NCSA. I talked a little bit with IBM, but they were pretty mum on the reasoning. But NCSA basically said that IBM just felt like they couldn't build the machine with the fixed price cost constraint. It's not like it was a cheap machine. The NSF was funding it to the tune of about $200 million plus, but that I guess wasn't enough to fulfill all the things they needed to do. So here we are.
Now, Michael, you pointed out in your article that you wrote, this is actually consistent with how IBM said it was going to behave starting over the last year. They've been saying pretty clearly in public that they weren't going to do unprofitable supercomputing business anymore, that they were going to be focused on profit margins, and that they didn't think they needed a big halo effect in the rest of their business for doing barely profitable or unprofitable supercomputing contracts.
Right. We had that discussion with IBM a couple of years ago. And, yeah, exactly as you described, they reformulated how they look at their supercomputing business, and they want it to be a profit center and not just a prestige center. I mean, I think they were making profits at times, but not consistently across the board. And, you know, some big deals like this, you know, that could eat into your overall profits. So, yeah, they've changed their
I was view. Discussing this with my partner, Chris Willard, with regards to this very topic of prestige. And he pointed out, you know, which do you think they got more prestige out of, Blue Waters, assuming it even went through, or the Watson machine that was on Jeopardy?
Right. Exactly.
I think they got considerably more prestige out of Watson, you know, which is a profitable product line for them. It was a PR gambit, to be sure, but nevertheless one with a significant human interest component to it. So, you know, let's be clear that IBM is doing good work with exciting computers. It's just they're looking at the top end here and saying this doesn't make business sense for us to move forward with this contract.
Right, exactly. And ironically, Watson was built with essentially the same technology as Blue Water. Basically, they're Power 7-based servers, slightly different flavor for Watson, but basically the same technology. And even the servers that were going to go in Blue Waters, IBM has other deals for these around. I mentioned three across in different places, but they're much smaller systems. They're not these petascale systems. They're basically test systems. So it's not like they're not going to sell this technology, but at this scale, I think there's a question now if this is even economically viable.
Yeah, and I think this, you know, gets down to the nut of how IBM's going to be doing this business. And now NCSA is going to put this back out, right? They still want the system, and they want someone else to deliver it now by the end of 2012, right?
Right, and that's less than a year and a half away. But, yeah, they're going to try and – the NSF has basically asked them to find another vendor and another system that can be put together and basically fulfill the same mission as what Blue Water is, basically a sustained petaflop with a 10 petaflop peak system to do basically the science and engineering type applications that NCSA wanted to put on that system. So, yeah, they want to go forward with this. They just don't have much time left now.
You know, it's funny. I was kind of mentioning this story to my family. You know, this is a big news story as far as I'm concerned. And I was explaining it to my 9-year-old, who heard the story that IBM had the contract, and he knew IBM from Watson, of course,
right?
And that they'd already started delivering and had already taken some of the money. And they said, you know, forget it. That's too much money. And his reaction was, that's not fair. you know, you had an agreement. You have to go forward on it, which is an interesting perspective. But I think in IBM's case, of course, there's a lot of termination clauses that they can do, and IBM doesn't have to go forward if it's going to be losing the money. Furthermore, I think this is the case where some other vendors might say this is a chance for them to gain. You know, your loss is our gain somehow. And it's interesting to think of who might bid on stepping up to be the new Blue Waters.
Yeah, well, I think anybody with you know, multi-petascale petaflop capability will now try and get NCSA's attention. I'm sure the folks there are busy talking to vendors as we speak.
Sure.
You know, I wrote probably SGI and Cray maybe have the biggest chance of doing this at this point because they work more at the top end than maybe some of the other vendors. But I think everybody's going to be in the mix to try and get this.
SGI, Cray, obvious choices. HP might even take a look at it. And then you get into some of the other vendors who might like to at least take a shot at putting in a bid.
Yeah, I mean, one of the ironic things about this deal with IBM, the system was basically the outcome of the PERCS work that they've done under the DARPA contract, the HPCS work, so-called, which is basically to produce petascale-type systems that were economically viable. And sure enough, this is the PERCS architecture. And although they've sold smaller systems, this is basically their first petascale PERCS system. And all of a sudden, it doesn't look like it's economically viable. So, you know, it just makes you think, well, what was HPCS about?
I've been a little critical about HPCS over the last couple of years as we've been getting into what are supposed to be these fulfillment years of it, and this certainly isn't helping the case. Now, Cray with Cascade has at least been shipping systems. Those are what, the XE6 systems now, right?
Yeah, the XE6 basically have the Cascade-type technology.
Although there are other aspects of HPCS, the software infrastructure, the programming languages, I haven't heard of a whole lot of applications being programmed in Chapel yet, right?
Right, right. I'm not sure all the technology is actually in the XE6. But yeah, some of this technology is being incorporated by both these vendors, but they received a lot of money to do this. I think Cray got like $250 million for phase three of this DARPA HPCS, yep. And IBM got $244 million. And, you know, at least from IBM's side, I said, what was the use of that if they really didn't fulfill sort of the intent of the mission there?
Yeah, that's where now I think the IBM response is going to be, well, a lot of the technologies from PERCS have made their way into other products, and that's probably true. But nevertheless, when you look at the original intent of HPCS to deliver these economically viable new supercomputing platforms by the end of 2010, I think it's pretty clear that we're falling short of that original dream.
Yeah, I think so too, and it sort of makes you think what's going to happen with this next DARPA thing, the UHPC contract. Is it going to be the same type of thing? But
Furthermore, if you back up a phase, do you remember who was the third vendor that was part of phase two along with Cray and IBM? Which third vendor got phase two funding?
Yeah, that was, well, when Sun Microsystems was there, it was Sun, yeah.
That's right. Sun Microsystems got a phase two HPCS fund, primarily based on their proximity interconnects,
right,
which I haven't heard the first thing about since they got the phase two funding, and I doubt we'll ever see those in the market.
Well, yeah, especially not under Oracle, as they're probably kind of low on the priority list over there, the database company. But yeah, that would have been a little bit of a travesty too, especially since Sun was kind of hurting already there. So it's sort of unfortunate the contract ended in this way. But again, it pulls in, causes them to question a lot of the other things that went into this. So. But yeah, going forward, it will be interesting to see who picks this up.
What does this mean for the United States again? I mean, this has been a theme that you and I have been visiting now for about a year, looking at the role of the U.S. on the global supercomputing market. We've now got the top supercomputers in China and Japan. Everyone was talking about Blue Waters is going to put the U.S. on the top of the heap again.
Right.
Now that's pushed out. Is the U.S. going to be number one in supercomputing?
Well, I think it probably will eventually. There's other systems coming out there. There's Titans coming up at Oak Ridge, and even there's the IBM Sequoia coming up at Lawrence Livermore. That's going to be a 20 petaflop system, supposedly. And so we'll get our systems in. You also should remember that K system, the current top system there, also had its share of problems. I remember a couple years, NEC and Hitachi pulled out of that project about a year before it was supposed to pull the trigger and left Fujitsu basically holding the bag, and they completed the contract there.
Right.
So
Fujitsu even initially announced it was going to pull out and then came back in, right?
Yeah, there was all sorts of problems. In fact, Japan, the Japanese government was... sounds like they were ready to kind of pull a lot of the funding out of that and thought better of it at the last minute. So that was, I think, even a rougher project than this one. I mean, at least NCSA is committed to this. They've still got the money, but they don't have a secondary contractor to go to. They're going to have to find one now, but I think they will. It's just going to be tough to get that in by the end of 2012.
Also, I believe the K system was fundamentally delivered on time, was it not?
I think probably the original schedule was a little in from when they tried it. But, yeah, I think the second schedule when they recontracted it, it came in on time. And they're still delivering it, actually. It'll be finalized next year. But, yeah, I mean, the NEC and Hitachi pullout did pull that schedule back. So, yeah, these big systems, I think maybe we're going to see more of this in the future where these systems are so big and complex, the scale of it, there's just going to be problems sort of economically pulling these things together. I hope we don't see more of these, but it wouldn't surprise me as we get into these multi-petaflop systems, we're going to have this problem.
Well, I think, you know, wrapping up this story, because it is an interesting and complex one, you and I, even in the pre-show, talked about it for a long time, Michael, and there's a lot of implications. But fundamentally, this is IBM doing what it said it was going to do. IBM believes that U.S. supercomputer manufacturers shouldn't have to lose money on these deals, and they're stepping up to how they said they were going to behave. And it doesn't mean that IBM isn't capable of fulfilling this contract or doesn't have the good technology. They just want it to make good business sense.
Right, and I commend them for that. I think that's a reasonable thing. I think NCSA doesn't hold any grudge against that. It's just, you know, NSF was willing to give a certain amount of money, and I think, you know, the government wants a good deal. The companies want to make money, but at some point, you know, when push comes to shove, they have to come to some agreement on what's gonna do it. So
right. And, you know, another thing that a lot of people don't even think of is there's only a certain amount of manufacturing capacity out on the floor. So even if something is slightly profitable, that's a lot of Power 7 processors that have to go through your manufacturing floor. And in a given quarter, what happens when you're in the middle of delivery on these large things is you wind up pushing out more profitable business in order to fulfill the less profitable business.
Right. That's a good point. I mean, IBM might have a lot more high-margin deals in the pipeline and just figured, well, we can maybe break even or make a little money on this, but here's all these other deals that it's pushing out, and maybe that was the decision point for them. that could very well have happened.
Yeah, it's certainly part of the calculation that you make from a business decision standpoint. Well, that was the big story of the week. There was another one that wasn't maybe as fundamental as Blue Waters, but nevertheless certainly interesting from an HPC standpoint, and that happened on the personnel side as NVIDIA keeps adding to the manpower that they have over the HPC star power that they have over there.
Yeah, they sure do. And this week they picked up Steve Scott, the CTO of Cray, who announced he was leaving, I think, earlier in the week, actually over the weekend.
Which just in itself was news. Steve Scott's leaving Cray, right?
Right, and they said he was going to a technology partner of Cray, so that could have been a lot of people. But sure enough, he ended up at NVIDIA. And like you said, they're accumulating a lot of HPC credibility over there with different people.
That's right. We are starting to tick them off. You got Steve Scott over there now. Bill Daly, we've mentioned before. Don Becker, we've mentioned before. They're starting to get some HPC heavyweights, traditional HPC heavyweights under the NVIDIA umbrella. And this is reminiscent of when Microsoft was gathering up so many HPC people, or Intel doing the same thing. Right. It's interesting to watch this push. Now, this is not the same as the general manager position of the Tesla business unit, right? They've created this CTO Tesla role for Steve Scott, and now we're still expecting another announcement for a general manager, a GM of the Tesla business unit.
Right. Andy Keene's position is still open, and that's right, the general management. Right. Steve Scott has basically created this position as CTO of this Tesla business, which makes NVIDIA's commitment seem even more important than it was before to this actual business. They've created a whole CTO level to this, which they didn't have before, and I don't know if they have to their other business areas as well. So this is sort of a reinvigoration of sort of the commitment, and certainly a nice endorsement from somebody from in the HPC business that NVIDIA is a real player.
Right. And, you know, NVIDIA, of course, coming off of a big week, we've been, you know, talking about this other HPC direct news so much we didn't even discuss SIGGRAPH, which was earlier in the week, but that's always a big show for NVIDIA.
Right. They were making some news there, certainly. Yeah. And they've been talking up. There's been a little news about the upcoming Kepler GPUs. I know, mostly rumor, but it looks like those are going to be coming out in 2012 and will probably be announced in the spring, I'm assuming. And yeah, it seems like all of a sudden NVIDIA is going to power through this, and they're going to come up with some big HPC news in the near future.
Excellent. Can't wait to see it.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll have just as big stories next week to talk about. But until then, have a good weekend.
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.